Good morning. You're listening to Midpoint on WMNF Tampa, and I'm your host, Shelley Reback. We're your mid-Florida, mid-week, mid-morning source for news and public affairs from a local perspective. Thanks for joining us. Let's talk about education in Florida today, shall we? A lot has happened in that regard this week. In the eye of the storm of Ron DeSantis' hostile takeover of public education in Florida is New College of Florida, the smallest of the Florida public liberal arts colleges, a secular, LGBTQ plus friendly, Sarasota-based school that was once a place where independent study reigned supreme, students were free to create their own majors and develop their own academic identities, their gender expressions, and a critical view of the world. It was a very progressive, liberal place. But that has all changed now as DeSantis announced his intention to turn New College into a Florida version of Hillsdale College, a conservative Christian college in Michigan with close ties to both DeSantis and Donald Trump. New College was a top-rated academic institution of higher learning, but this is probably the last year we can say that. Earlier this year, DeSantis appointed six activist conservatives, including the culture war strategist Chris Rufo, to New College's board of trustees. Rufo is the guy who made critical race theory into a right-wing target. And he appointed Eddie Speer, the co-founder of a private Christian school called Inspiration Academy. These new trustees fired the school's president and replaced her with Richard Corcoran, a DeSantis crony and the Republican former Speaker of the Florida House. They fired the school's chief diversity officer and dismantled the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Office. The Board of Trustees denied tenure to five veteran professors, even though they had already received approvals at every step of the process. And last week, they fired the school's librarian, making her the second LGBTQ plus employee dismissed by the college this year. According to Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times, they even scraped off the gender-neutral signage from the school bathrooms. The ideological revolution is not confined to New College. The Florida Department of Education announced yesterday that it has rejected 35% of the K-12 social studies textbooks submitted by publishers. In their ongoing attempt to, quite literally, whitewash history, Florida has banned the teaching of several ideas, including the notion that, quote, equality of treatment under the law is not a sufficient condition to achieve justice, close quote. It is like the DeSantis administration wants students to be taught history or social studies only up to a point. So any mention of calls for social justice, like the Black Lives Matter or protests of the murder of George Floyd, those were all removed from the social studies books reviewed by the Department of Education and from any of the books that they accepted. As was any mention or explanation of people kneeling during the national anthem, or any mention or explanation of the concept of white privilege, those textbooks that were accepted were those that already made those type of editorial changes to conform with the Department of Education's new requirements. The requirements are largely set out in House Bill 1537. Though it is not quite as bad as the initial version proposed by Governor DeSantis and the House Republican leadership, it still requires the review of curriculums, quote, based on theories that systemic racism, sexism, oppression, and privilege are inherent in the institutions of the United States. This education law coming out of Tallahassee and approved by the governor just yesterday will still dangerously erode academic freedom on our public college and university campuses. Among other things, the law inserts conservative orthodoxy into general education courses. It bans diversity, equity, and inclusion. It gives the governor's political appointees more authority over hiring and firing university personnel at all public universities, and it weakens collective bargaining protections for faculty. And here's the kicker. It also mandates that by next year, every school district in Florida shall select either the SAT, ACT, or the Classic Learning Test for district-wide administration to each and every student in grade 11. I had never heard of the Classic Learning Test before it became law, but since every 11th grader in Florida may now be taking it to get to their Bright Future scholarship, it seemed important that we all learn more about it. So to help us understand what is the Classic Learning Test that our children may be studying for and why it is being required in Florida, I've invited some experts in classical education to, well, educate us about it. So in the studio today with me is Matt Newton. Matt is now a local attorney with Older and Lundy Law Firm in Tampa, but for our purposes, he is also an alum of New College of Florida, where he was a classics major. So welcome, Matt.
Welcome, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
On the telephone with us in a little bit will be Naomi Campa. Naomi is a Floridian herself. She also graduated from New College of Florida with a bachelor's degree in classics and then completed a master's and a PhD in classics from the University of Washington. And she's now an assistant professor of classics at the University of Texas at Austin. And she'll be with us in a couple minutes. Before we begin our education this morning, I want to remind you all that you are also welcome to join our conversation during our live show by calling 813-239-9663, emailing me at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So let us hear from you if you have some thoughts about the Florida education policies as they are evolving and or the value of a classical education. So, Matt, let me start with you.
Sure.
You've looked at this new law, HB 1537.
I have.
What is it trying to do by requiring that all students be permitted to take the Classic Learning Test? What, first of all, what is that test and why do you think it's now being offered?
So there's this premise kind of circulating around among certain groups that the ACT and the SAT are philosophically bankrupt, that they're not really, that essentially classrooms teach to the test, and if we're going to be teaching to the test, let's teach to something that's philosophically rich, and we're going to pick what philosophies those are, and those philosophies are going to be squarely within what we define as classical education.
Western classical education.
Excuse me, Western classical
Western
education.
Christian classical education, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you read some of the interviews that one of the co-founders had done, there's some very disturbing talking points, such as that the core tenets of a Catholic Christian philosophy have been stripped away from public education. And of course, Shelley, as both of us attorneys know, there really shouldn't be an intertwining of religion and public funding
you
at all.
You think?
And so maybe that's why there was a perception that Catholicism was absent from our standardized tests. But here, with this bill, we're advancing a premise where we're going to put this test, with all of its problematic founding, on the same footing as the ACT and the SAT. Which are agnostic tests, as they should be.
Yeah. Yeah, because the First Amendment prohibits any efforts by the state to privilege one religion over another religion. And, you know, this seems like a situation where if your particular school requires teaching to this classic learning test, it seems like it will privilege a Christian sort of theologically based academic pursuit in preparation to take the test.
Well, absolutely. Imagine if you're an immigrant that came from an Islamic background and you moved to high school in 10th grade and suddenly you're having to catch up with everybody that may have a Catholic Christian background and compete on the playing field a year later in 11th grade. Tests shouldn't be designed that way.
Right.
Tests should be coming from an equal footing ground. And the ACT and SAT, they may be boring. First to admit, I did not enjoy studying for the SATs as a high schooler. But boring is the point.
Yeah. I mean, there are valid criticisms to be made about the SAT and the ACT in terms of, not reflecting the lived experience of everybody in society. It's the absence of things that I think are most critiqued with respect to the SAT. You know, the absence of things, you know, like asking kids to imagine, you know, things happening on farms in fact mm-hmm. patterns or whatever in an urban area. You know, a kid who grows up in a predominantly urban area is not going to have any experience of that type of thing. That's just one sort of benign example. There are valid criticisms of the SAT, but it's not because it's religious based, theologically based, I think. I have Naomi joining us, Naomi Campa, who is a professor of classics at the University of Texas. Naomi, I gave your background before you joined us, and I'm happy to have you on the phone with us. Are you there? Let me see. Naomi, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
hey.
I can hear you.
Hi.
All right, can you hear us?
Yes. Hi, Shelley. Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. So in the introduction, I mentioned your background, and you are also a New College alum and now a assistant professor of classics at the University of Texas, Austin. And so I thought one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, I know you're aware that Florida is now mandating the availability of this classic learning test as an alternative to the SAT. And so one of the things I wanted to ask you as an assistant professor of classics is, I have to assume that before you can administer a test like this, you have to teach to the test. And so what will students in 11th grade, juniors in high school, what will they have to learn in order to be prepared to take a test like the classic learning test?
Well, it's a good question, and part of the problem with answering it is that I could not find very much information on the test. You had the same experience. So I spent some time on the website whenever I heard about this, and I had some trouble figuring out what DeSantis was proposing, but then, you know, once I found that a little bit more, I tried to look at the CLT website, and you can't get any sample anything.
Yeah.
You can see the list of authors, which is helpful. Which include a variety of authors from different time periods.
Well, like who?
In a couple of different places. There's ancient, medieval, and modern. So, yes, Plato's on there. Livy's on there. Plato's an ancient Greek philosopher, an Athenian philosopher. And then you have Livy, a Roman historian. But there are medievalists as well, Hildegard. And there's modern people as well, and I'm sure, you know, they're quick to point out that Toni Morrison is on there, as is, you know, Gandhi. But the list is pretty broad, and it's not limited to what someone like me who teaches what's often termed classics, which is really ancient Mediterranean studies. We study the ancient cultures of Greece and Rome, and some other nearby cultures. Often there'll be a person who studies ancient Egypt in the classics department or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the cultures of ancient Greece and Rome went pretty far east. So people will study, you know, even Turkey, what is now known as Turkey, et cetera.
Well,
but this list is more comprehensive than that.
Well, so, let me ask you something. Like, do you view or do you understand that an education in the classics is somewhat of an endorsement of a Christian or Catholic intellectual worldview? Because I don't think, you know, like Plato really got into that.
Yeah, so, you know, that was kind of my point is that, you know, looking at the exam or the information, I could find the exam and the information that Jeremy Tate, the founder or the creator of the exam, said about it. He's using the word classic or classics to kind of tap into this idea of, you know, buildings with columns and people like Plato and kind of the grandeur of antiquity.
Yes.
His real goal is a construction of Western civilization, which is based partly on how we've interpreted Greco-Roman works, in addition to specifically what he says, I mean, in his words, is a Christian Catholic tradition. So, you know, there are people who will argue that Plato is somehow writing to a future Christian audience. That is not a mainline view, of course, but it's unclear to me what types of interpretation of these authors are going to be taken on this exam, because I was not able to see any sample passages. And I guess my point in kind of pointing out that the different eras and authors included is that the text in themselves are rarely good or bad, right? There's a few that are you know, pretty good, and a few that are pretty bad no matter what. But text and authors in themselves and collections of text and authors are really colored by what you're going to do with them.
Yeah. All right.
Incorrect interpretation.
We've got some phones, some phone calls here that
phones are going crazy.
Well, they were. A couple people dropped off. So please call back if I didn't get to pick you up.
They want to talk about Thucydides.
Yeah. Do we have any Thucydides experts here? All right. Let me bring in Sam from Tampa, who's been very patient. Sam, you're on the air.
Morning, Shelley. Morning, Matt.
Morning, Sam.
I was at NCF recently. I was speaking at a rally. I'm not an NCF alum or student, but it's an institution that I've admired for a long time. And I was there speaking at a rally against everything that is happening. And the tension on campus obviously is really palpable, right? Because the staff, the students, I mean, they're not backing down. And I think that is purely because they can see the writing on the wall. I will say this ad nauseum, true to any dictatorship, I think the first thing always to go is education, and I think that's exactly what's happening in Florida. That's exactly what DeSantis is doing in Florida, especially with these exams and taking a classical perspective. I think right at the beginning of the show, y'all pointed out a Western classical perspective, a Western classical Christian perspective, and that's so true to what's happening here. You know, even yesterday, I learned that in Russia, they're inviting Russian teachers to apply for teaching positions to support the occupation in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Why? So that if the occupation succeeds, they can then eliminate all Ukrainian history and force future generations to learn only Russian history and even Russian language and completely erase anything Ukrainian history.
All right, sure. Sam. Thank you for your comment. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. You know, Matt, we talked right before we went on the air about the fact that this is, as Sam suggested, a sort of, you know, political effort because I want to be clear, there's nothing wrong with an education in classics.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, you were a classics major. Naomi Campa was a classics major and teaches classics now. There's nothing wrong with it, per se. But I think it's being used in a very political way. What's your understanding of that, and who's behind this, and why?
Yeah, so one of Naomi's colleagues over at Vassar University has been maintaining this. I'd say it's really a blog maintained by the professor and students, Professor Dozer.
What's it called?
It's called Pharos, Pharos. So if you Google Vassar Pharos, you'll pull it up, and it's tons of examples and tons of literature about this quasi recent phenomenon of weaponizing classical studies and using it as a really a mask for hateful dialogue. The most recent blog post was various misogynists really going deep into classical texts, finding examples of misogyny and saying, hey, if this great mind thought this way, then who are you to criticize me for feeling the same way? And so this instrument, which was really popularized, I think, in 2016 by Steve Bannon, who fancies himself a classics scholar.
Oh, really?
So if you look at photographs of rallies with the far right, you will see symbols such as Spartan helmets and Greek text and folks believing that they're, quote unquote, culture war gladiators. Which is interesting if you actually understand the culture of gladiators back in antiquity, but weren't the most respected people in the world.
They weren't.
They were not.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it's a phenomenon, and there is a lot of folks in classical circles who feel the need to speak out about it. And kudos to Scott Dozer and kudos to Naomi for tipping me off about this database.
Yeah, Naomi, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been absolutely a rise in using classics in this kind of insidious way. I think there's a history behind it, and it's taken on a new color because these texts, to me, I mean, I'm going to say classical texts are interesting and exciting, right? That's why I dedicate my entire working life to them.
Right.
But unfortunately, the same excitement.
They're being co-opted, though, it sounds like.
It can absolutely be co-opted, and this is something we see historically. They've been used for positive things, but as well as for negative, because they can reflect kind of our own time and place, the way we interpret these texts. And as Matt points out, this collection of examples on the Pharos website is a pretty up-to-date one. If anyone looks it up, it also, there are several posts that include some information about the actual thing being referenced and how a scholar would actually interpret it. So Matt's comment about gladiators, for example, might be more further explained for you if you look it up on the website. I will say, I mean, classics that were used as far back as, the abolitionist movement. People use classical text to make arguments for abolition. They also use it to make arguments for slavery, right? So the idea of using these texts in ways that promote ideas that are insidious, and I would say it in some part times in cross purposes to how somebody might normally interpret these texts, is a historical phenomenon that's taken on, you know, a very prominent role right now in the United States in issues like education.
Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with the Bible, isn't it? Same thing with the Bible. People use it to support their worldview, you know, from both political perspectives, you know.
There was an interesting, and I went on a Kindle rampage last night downloading books after looking through Professor Dozer's website, and just so many examples throughout recent history of cultures stapling themselves to antiquity to lend authority. One book, you know, I was reading was actually references to Mein Kampf, where Adolf Hitler forced a line from the Third Reich to ancient Greece to add authority to his positions. In the same vein that the abolitionists and anti-abolitionists did.
Yeah. Let me bring in David, who's been very patient. David, you're on the air. You with us?
Hi.
Hi,
I'm tuning in a little bit late. I was curious if your guests have talked about what's happening at New College and you know, the kind of remaking into a Hillsdale of the South. I went to New College, and we had classics, you know, curriculum from the get-go. And I find it ironic that, you know, they're going from a program that really taught critical thinking skills and excellent writing skills and are kind of doing away with all that great curriculum and unique kind of educational philosophy to just, it feels like they're just dumbing it down right now. And I feel for the students and faculty that are at New College. But just curious about your guest's take on that.
Yeah, welcome, Dave.
Thank
you're speaking
you,
to a couple of New College classical alums right now.
Right, yeah. Both Matt and Naomi studied classics at New College.
Empty sets.
Yeah. And I have to say, I did not go to New College, but I was explaining to Matt before we went on the air that the school that I went to when I went there, it may not be the same now, was very similar. It was a place to learn how to think critically. It did not have a core curriculum. You could take whatever you wanted in whatever fashion you wanted. Students were welcome in seminars, you know, even as sophomores. I personally wound up with 3 semesters of the literature of Virginia Woolf just because it interested me. A survey class on geography of American poverty, a seminar on medieval literature, a whole semester on the Nibelungenlied, an Icelandic saga. I mean, you know, there really wasn't a core curriculum, and I believe that that's, up until recently, that was the case at New College, and now they've instituted a core curriculum there. And also, they are now funding in huge amounts of our tax taxpayer dollars, a sports program at a place that had no sports before. Apparently, maybe it's in tribute to DeSantis, but apparently they are going to have a baseball program as their first foray into sports. And they hired a baseball coach from this Inspiration Academy business run by one of their trustees. So the whole thing is a big grift on top of everything else.
I do want to buy some of those jerseys, though, when they come out. I got to say that it's going to be exciting to wear a college baseball jersey.
They are offering so much money, so much of our tax dollars to attract athletes, presumably baseball players, you know, to new college in the future, and to develop a Greek life there in a place where there was no Greek life before. And again, as I said to you earlier, the school that I went to, Greek life and contact sports were banned in the charter because academics were, you know, had priority.
Yeah, I think to understand where New College is going, without waxing too nostalgic, Nami, why don't we talk a little bit about what it was like? I mean, we were there in, I entered in 05, I think, you were 02 or?
I was 02, yeah. And so, you know, we weren't at the very beginning in 1960, but we certainly benefited from the type of open education that Shelley, you've been talking about, yeah. And that you want to wax nostalgic about, because I sure do too. There was no core curriculum, and I don't know how that's going to be implemented now, but New College is really unique. It's unique because it allowed you to really create your education in a way that made sense to you with the guidance of professors. This is mm-hmm. not a free-for-all. Right. You had to come to an agreement with your professors about what you were going to take. And there are certain classes that you had to take before others. It wasn't, you know, a complete chaos as it's sort of been described.
Right.
You know, you can't take Calculus 5 without taking Calculus 1 or whatever it may be, or Greek 2 without taking Greek 1. But the proposal was that students should be excited about what they're learning about and should be allowed to feed that excitement by deep diving into the subjects of their interest. Exactly. And so that was true. I took a philosophy of language class in my first year, which in a traditional school would have been marked as a much higher
upper level seminar.
And so what this created instead for me was an environment where I really got to see upper level philosophy students in the classroom along with a few rookies like me, right? Which really enriched my first year in a way that a 101 class wouldn't have. Not that there isn't a place for 101 class, but kind of this cross-generational exchange of ideas. And I got to see these older students as well model what it meant to kind of think freely in the classroom yeah. and study and write papers, et cetera.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because student mentorship was so important. And you mentored me. I remember I was a first-year Greek student, and you took me under your wing. And I was struggling, and you put in the time to make sure that I understood it at a high level, just as those other older students helped you out.
I want to direct this to the listeners and ask, what do you think about these new changes to the educational laws? Do we have any liberal arts majors listening to this program who felt that you benefited from a diverse and eccentric humanities or liberal arts curriculum? What was your experience at the university level? Give us a call at let me give out the phone number here, Naomi, before you jump in. Give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email us here at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. And let us know if you think that there's a value to having this sort of open, college experience with fewer requirements and you know, maybe the absence of a core curriculum and this idea of student mentorship. I know it was very valuable to me, and I know that the students who are currently enrolled at New College feel largely the same way. I read this op-ed piece by Michelle Goldberg about New College in the New York Times at the end of April, and she noted that, you know, with this new plan to establish fraternities and sororities, it's likely to create a culture clash with the kind of artsy queer kids, activists, and autodidacts, you know, self-teachers who are currently there. And maybe this was the protest that Sam, one of our callers earlier, attended. But she noted that before a recent board meeting, about 75 people held a protest outside that meeting and held up signs that said things like, "We're nerds and geeks, not jocks and Greeks." there really does seem to be kind of a culture clash between the new college that you, Matt, and Naomi experienced when you were there, and perhaps the students that are there today and what they see as coming down the pike, you know, in the next years. So, you know, I'd like to ask our listeners what they think about these changes and what their own college experiences were with regard to the way that you learned to learn in college and university.
I want to emphasize something that Naomi pointed out about, you know, this is not a free-for-all. It was not easy. I mean, the advisors held you to a high standard. And while there were no grades, they were pass or fail, and it was easy to fail if you didn't put in the work. You know, there's this premise floating around that kids are studying zombie studies. I did not study zombie studies. you know, if there is zombie studies, maybe it's an independent study project.
But, you know, there were, and at least today still are, I think, curriculum, you know, we expect that in this changeover at New College, and not only at New College, but in all of the public colleges and universities of Florida, we expect that we're going to be losing certain curricula, like, for example, gender studies, women's studies, black studies, Latin American studies, Jewish studies, maybe, you know, are all these kinds of classes and curriculums that the DeSantis administration abhors.
Well, yeah. And so a couple of years ago, if you recall, Shelley, I think it was Randy Fine was pushing to merge New College with
House Representative Randy Fine.
He was looking to dissolve New College, merge it with another institution. And at the time, it was a lot of economic arguments saying that we're wasting money. I think he used gender studies as an example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because people can't get jobs from gender studies. That was the argument, as I recall, you know, that they wanted to make sure that universities were basically career factories.
Yeah, and that's
right. And the irony is that that's what the president is saying he doesn't want to do here.
That's true.
President. But what I do want to just defend New College really quickly for those listeners that maybe aren't so familiar with it. It's not just anecdotally that Matt and I enjoyed New College and went on to have what I would consider successful careers. So we did get jobs and we did pretty good at it.
Right. Congratulations.
Thanks. But by actually data, you know, for some of these types of awards that students can win, for example, Fulbright, which is a really prestigious type of fellowship you can win.
Right.
New College for a long time had more Fulbrights per capita than Harvard.
Wow.
The same thing with Goldwater scholarships, which is a math and science-based scholarship. Not as many as Harvard, but again, we've produced Goldwater scholars. We've produced Rhodes scholars. The Rhodes scholars, so if you don't know these, this is, a really competitive international fellowship provided by Oxford. People like previous presidents have won this.
Yeah, Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So these are really competitive fellowships that are judged by outsiders, right? This is a New College professor saying, hey, students, you're doing a great job. These are national and international bodies who are saying our students, the students that New College have produced, are the best of the best. And so I think that's really important for people to hear, because the way that New College has been painted and the sorts of things that the new president has said about New College has not emphasized the amount of excellence that we've achieved, both at kind of personal levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something anecdotal like Matt and I can share, but also at these kind of national metrics.
That's a good point. That is being lost in the sauce of all these arguments. But Naomi, you're in academia, so let me ask you, how do you think these changes to educational policy in Florida are going to affect the ability to draw faculty and students to Florida colleges and universities?
Yeah, is this looking appetizing to you, Naomi?
The new president wants to talk about free market thinking. Well, that's not going to, certain changes are not going to make certain states or schools competitive. But particularly at New College, when you look at the changes that are happening, if he wants to create New College a great book school, there's plenty of those. There's only one New College. And so it's really taking away the kind of unique elements of New College and creating things like you've mentioned, like Greek life and baseball. Hey, I played sports growing up. I'm not anti-sports, but the difference at New College was that our pastime was really thinking about what we were learning and sharing that information with each other, right? Which gets, put down into a placard as we're nerds and geeks. But that means focusing our energies on going to a party and discussing Derrida. That had never happened to me in my life until then.
Uh-huh.
It was very refreshing. And so New College had a really strong identity. It had some financial issues, which I think could have been dealt with, and enrollment issues. But by changing its character, it's actually making it less competitive, because it's going to be just like many other
just
schools.
Like everywhere else, that. Right.
Yeah.
And I will say, also, in terms of the great books curriculum, the worrisome part is that it's not simply a great books curriculum. It's being modeled after a private Christian school. And as the notes that, as Matt noted earlier, we shouldn't really intertwine public education with any religion.
Right.
So I don't really care if it's a private Muslim school or a private Christian school. I think that we shouldn't be modeling a public institution after a parochial one.
Right, especially with tax dollars. I'm going to bring in David from St. Pete, who's on the line. David, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that this movement in the New College is maybe part of a larger process I've been observing for several years to deprofessionalize teaching in the state of Florida, kind of reduce faculty to the role of education clerks and a big edu Walmart. And I've seen that for several years. This is all part of, a long process, and including this latest legislation to require 60% union membership, or they will decertify teachers' unions. And they're targeting teachers' unions rather than police and firefighters. very specific targeting.
Right, they're exempting all of the first responder unions because they believe that they are more reliable Republican voters.
Dave, thank you so much for that comment, because actually, if you look at the numbers of New College, traditionally New College has never had adjunct faculty. They've had visiting faculty or tenure track. And the difference for those of you who haven't been following it closely as Dave is that you get actually paid a salary and benefits as opposed to being paid per class at what usually works out to less than a minimum wage or a living wage at the very least.
Yeah, like a $1,500 a semester for adjunct faculty locally in the Tampa area.
And if you look at Hillsdale College, if you look at Hillsdale's numbers, they have, I think it's over 25% adjunct faculty. So that's a really astute observation of what's been happening to professors. And if that's something else they're going to take from the Hillsdale model, it is particularly worrisome. The faculty-to-student ratio is also much higher at Hillsdale than at New College. New College maintained a 10-to-1 faculty-to-student ratio. And just one more comment to defend New College professors here because of the way they've been painted in the media. Being a professor is hard work, and so thank you so much for that comment about recognizing that they're not these kind of automata. And New College professors spend so much time on students, writing evaluations, right? It's not just pass-fails, it's intense evaluations. It's mentoring students. It's letting students do independent study. All of that is essentially unpaid labor. And New College professors put in a lot of their time in this type of labor. They have to upkeep their research, they have to do their classes, and then they do all this extra mentorship and work to make sure that students are successful. That's another very unique part of New College. And that is something that will not be provided by adjunct systems or by kind of, as you said, phasing out these kind of
Well, thanks.
I forget how you phrased it.
Thanks for your call, David, from St. Pete. We appreciate your comments. Thanks.
I can just also state, since I teach, that the full-time faculty ratio, at least in the institution where I teach, has decreased 21%. In the past 30 years. So this is the model going toward adjunct faculty, treating faculty as staff, having no real equity or power in institutions. And then, of course, if you add that religious stamp on top of it, you know, they have the authority of God behind them, so they can do this. So I've had many experiences along this line. It's remarkable. It's a punitive strike. DeSantis has just decided he was going to go after the most, I think, interesting and unique college in the state of Florida and beat on it. It's a very punitive action he's taking, but it's not the only punitive action.
It's not. Yeah. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. I've got.
We can add Rick Scott to that list.
I've got another call I'm going to take, but thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Devin.
I've got Allie in St. Pete who's calling. Are you with us?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome to Midpoint.
Thank you. I did not go to New College, but I did have a partner who did around 2012. And I got the unique experience of spending a lot of time at New College because I went to USF. And we both studied environmental science. So I feel like the sciences are something that are often overlooked at New College because it is primarily a liberal arts school. And one of the things that's often pointed to as one of its failings, but I would disagree that as someone who went to a traditional large school, my partner got a much better education going to New College and getting that diversity of curriculum. I mean, they were able to study specific marine sciences in a way that I would have to switch schools, switch my applications to be able to even see. I had a friend who was in entomology who, during their independent study term, went out and was able to discover an entire new species of insect.
Wow.
He wouldn't have been able to accomplish that if it wasn't for the support and individual mentorship of his professors at the time. I just feel like, I mean, the core curriculum, while it's beneficial to the sciences and the liberal arts in very minute ways and ways that may be correct ways that our public education system fails us, I don't believe they're helpful enough to make the independent ability, the willingness to learn, less relevant.
All right. Well, thank you for your comments. Appreciate it.
That's a great point about the sciences.
Thank you, Allie.
We have, you know, a number of loved ones who were science majors in the proximity to Moat Marine, and just a lot of the great work that they were able to do in that department while we were there and witness was outstanding. Very exciting stuff.
And that you normally would not have access to, especially as an early career undergraduate.
Yeah.
Because since it is a smaller arts college, there's no graduate students. So the undergraduates get to really undertake a lot of this high-level research work.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I have a text message here from Bubba who says, I went to New College, and I'm very saddened about the conservative takeover. Randy Fine is a big architect of this, and he just has sour grapes that the University of Florida takeover failed. I'm not sure if it failed. I mean, Ben Sasse is there, but in any event, he goes on to say, this reign of terror reminds me of Mao's Cultural Revolution. Thanks so much, comrades DeSantis and Fine. Well, thanks for your comments, Bubba. It is like a cultural revolution, though. It is. They are trying to, you know, certainly starting with New College, you know, remake it the image of Hillsdale.
Chris Rufo would phrase it that way. I mean, he talks about a lot of rhetoric about recapturing institutions.
Yeah.
And this is essentially, what we're witnessing, and I would say slow motion, but it's not slow motion.
No, it's pretty rapid.
Yeah. Very fast. New College is a perfect target because it's so small, so it's actually very cheap.
And in fact, this new law that went into effect that incorporates the requirement of this classical learning test was amended, I think, to make it to make it for next year as opposed to, you know, further off in the future. No, they want it by next year to have this classical learning test, the next academic calendar year, to have this classic learning test be made mandated to be made available as an alternative for 11th grade students throughout the state.
I will say that if they want to do that, then they need to fix the errors on their website. The amount of errors I found on the test website, on the classical text.
Tighten it up, CLT.
Well, but also, and again, this goes back to my question earlier in the show, don't they have to develop a curriculum to teach to this test before they can, you know, mandate that students...
Of course, which you know, I'm going to make a prediction. I don't think any school districts are going to do this. I think this is largely symbolic. I mean, that's just my opinion. It's so much work for what?
Well, but as I read the law, every district is going to have to make it available as a choice.
I was reading it as to pick it. But I mean, either way, I mean, it's
I think as I read the law, every district has to make it available as an alternative to the SAT and ACT. I assume that meant that the student gets to pick, and students can pick this classic learning test over the SAT.
Well, I'm sure the Department of Education will clarify.
just like
in a very sarcastic way.
Just like they've clarified woke and all of these other things that we have to deal with. Okay, so we're reading from the bill now, quoting from this HB 1537, and it says, each school district shall, by the 2023-24 school year, that's next year, and subject to appropriation, so I'm not sure what that means, subject to appropriation.
As long as they have money to do so.
Oh, as long as they have money to do so, okay. Select either the SAT or ACT. No, or is crossed out.
Well, it's moved after ACT.
Yeah, select either the SAT, ACT, or classic learning test for district-wide administration to each public school student in grade 11, including students attending public high schools, alternative schools, and Department of Juvenile Justice Education programs. So as I read that, that means that every student has the opportunity to take the classic learning test instead of the SAT in their junior year of high school.
See, I'm reading that as the school district may select or shall select one of them, not all of them.
Ah, see that? We don't. And you have two lawyers here disagreeing over the interpretation of the law.
Yeah.
I guess that's going to have to be, you know, adjudicated, or more guidance from the Department of Education.
Or send one of us to Tallahassee.
Yeah, but really, I mean, imagine if you like, I don't know, they don't even have a sample test yet, right, Naomi, on their website? So
I believe you can order one if you create a login and et cetera.
Yeah, if you give them all of your data so they can track you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I do not want to give them my data.
Your data and probably your money, you know, probably your money, because it's coming out of this crony of DeSantis. And so to me, I can't help but think that requiring the classic learning test is another part of what I call the great grift going on in Florida, where the cronies of the governor all stand to profit in some way from the changes he's making to education policy. So his buddy Richard Corcoran got a salary that was literally double the previous president of New College when Corcoran signed on. And the new law that gives voucher payments to every student in Florida, regardless of their family income, will largely go to pay for tuition at this network of charter schools that are all owned or managed by a coterie of DeSantis cronies. So do we know, let me put it in classic terms, qui bono, like who benefits? That's Latin for who benefits. Who benefits from requiring this test? Do we know who owns it, who stands to profit? Because, you know, I think there will be Hillsdale-affiliated education companies that will have to provide tutoring, who, you know, families will pay for to increase the chances of their kid getting a score. But then the problem for all of those grifters is what universities around the country other than the Florida universities are going to accept the classic learning test in lieu of the ACT or SAT?
I think probably the goal is, okay, if Florida starts accepting it, you know, it'll be, I think there's a handful that accept it now, largely private, small schools.
Yeah, about 200.
Okay, that's a respectable amount, yeah.
Well, it is until, I mean, if you say name 200 schools and you're not in academia, it probably seems really daunting. But when you actually look at the list of schools, they're private Christian schools, mostly.
Okay. Yeah.
So if that is where you intend to go, it would, you know, just from a practical perspective, then taking the CLT is
fine.
A good idea,
right.
Taking the SAT or the ACT. But it's
and plus, so many schools now are not requiring even submission of the SAT. You know, after the pandemic, they're just not even requiring that all students submit the SAT or ACT. So, you know, what the heck?
Right. Some of those have been grandfathered in.
Right.
Some schools are restarting.
Let me read a couple.
Large schools won't take.
Let me read a couple emails here. John, who says that it seems to me that if our governor was interested in making it more successful and still keeping it a liberal arts college, that Eckerd College would be a better model than what he chose. Great show. Thanks from John in Ozona. But Eckerd's a private school, right? Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have.
Private, but it's not. I guess his point is it's not religious in any kind of religion. It's not Christian or otherwise. So it's a private liberal arts model that has some flexibility in the curriculum, and it's down the street.
All right. I have Ken who says, with all due respect, as I listen, I only hear one side of the argument. Would you mind refuting the points of anti-CRT thinking that drives these new college changes? Well, Ken, I don't think I'm capable of refuting the anti-CRT. If I understand your question correctly, you want me to support being anti-CRT, anti-critical race theory?
I think he wants us to address that CRT is bad.
Yeah, that's what I think he wants.
I haven't heard any reference to CRT other than in little stump speeches. I mean, it's not in the bill. It's not, I mean.
Well, it's become part of educational policy
correct.
In Florida.
That's
because
true.
Any reference to anything having to do with CRT that's in, for example, these social studies books that are published for grades K through 12, that they can't have that in those books.
But CRT was always a straw person, like,
right.
Politically.
It's not taught in K through 12.
I mean, no, it's... I can't refute it because it's a straw person.
Yeah, and it's never been taught in K through 12.
I didn't take any classes on it in New College.
Was it referenced in New College or to the?
I don't know. You know, as far I mean, I took or studied critical race theory in law school. It's more of a, you know, a law school concept. So I don't know, Ken. We'll have to think about, you know, doing another show that focuses on CRT
and thank you for listening. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and you know, call in at that point. I need to wrap it up right now. I want to give my thanks to my guests, attorney and New College alum Matt Newton, and Professor Naomi Campa, also a New College alumna and former adjunct faculty at NCF, I think, for being with us to fill us in on the new
visiting
faculty, for being with us to fill us in on the new classical education law. Thanks also to our WMNF volunteers, Jessica Green, my soundboard operator, and DJ Spaceship has been filling in for us on the phones today, answering phones for Midpoint. And most importantly, I want to thank you lovely people in listener land who tune in to Midpoint and who give me the privilege of this platform for commentary and the exchange of ideas every week. If you appreciate the Midpoint Show, please feel free to drop us a donation in the tip jar and tell the WMNF powers that be that you listen to Midpoint. They need to know that because your support keeps us commercial-free 24/7. We can only be unbound and free because we are brought to you by you and the entire community of WMNF radio activists and generous supporters. We are the place where music, news, and culture collide, or maybe snuggle up together. So please stay tuned for Talking Animals right now with Duncan Strauss on WMNF Tampa.